We're going to be talking about Default American when we get into the
Okay.
opening segment.
Well, it might come up. I'm going to say this.
That's fine.
Wait, what the fuck is going on with this? What's your bio all about?
I
The
don't know.
Robbie and Robert Project started with a mutual admiration for Kobe Bryant and the Beatles and a rivalry
Makes
with
sense.
Colton Saylor. They wrote hundreds of songs. Don't listen to Colton Saylor. He sucks. Am I
We
having a
need.
stroke? That's real.
What? This is just now hitting you?
I've never been on your Spotify. I don't have Spotify.
Default American has always, in one way or another, attacked Colton Saylor. We're hoping to promote you.
Well, I don't know. Based off of my last glance at my Bandcamp page, I don't think it's working. But also, I'm not trying very hard to make it work.
We are.
Welcome to Know Your Rights, a music podcast from two guys who know just enough about songwriting to start a podcast about.
Follow Rob
and Colton
as each week we dive into a different band or songwriter and discuss what makes them great,
okay, or otherwise.
Music is law,
and we know our rights. Welcome.
Welcome. Welcome, everybody. I've been counting, so we're on 55 here.
Is it really?
Yes, old 55.
That's, I know, I feel like we're doing this too much, but that's insane to me that we've done 55 of these.
Yeah, it's I've gotten over the initial shock of doing a podcast, and now I'm in the stage of the shock of continuing doing the podcast.
Yeah, I think if you're listening to this and you're like, why are they so like reflective every episode? It's like, because every episode to us feels like a miracle.
It is. It really is.
Considering how both of us are set up doing other things too, the fact, but I
Sure.
think an episode like today is what makes it possible.
Oh, amen. Yes. It was very nice because I was a little behind. I released everybody go and listen to it, LS Dunes. I was able to finish it up yesterday, and it was nice finishing it up knowing that I only have one song I have to listen to.
Yeah. And that was a good episode, man. That was a lot of fun to talk about.
I agree. I agree. Anthony, we apologize for anything that might be considered an insult, but you know what? There were also really nice things said about you.
No, I think he's a big boy. I don't think he's online all the time Googling his name looking for mentions.
Are we throwing shade?
No, I'm not throwing shade.
Okay,
I
okay.
literally just Googled myself, so I can't. There's no
I thought
place
we
for
were
me
maybe
to.
going Casey Crescenzo all over again.
Oh my Lord. Well, this is cool, man. We are listening to, or we're talking about, Wondering Where the Lions Are by the great Rhys Cockburn, which I am very excited.
Coburn is what I've learned. At least that's
Oh,
how
is it?
Alanis Morissette introduced him on stage as Bruce Coburn. Everything I've watched, it's pronounced Coburn.
Well, I have to apologize. This is,
The
oh, you
cock
know
is
what?
silent.
There's a clear pronunciation on Wikipedia that I very much ignored. But also,
You
what's
know
going
what I
on here?
want to
That K
say.
is never silent.
This is so hard for me to be a grown up right now. I want to make jokes. I won't make jokes.
I just think like that's why teaching English is so difficult. Like the actual language English. I don't teach it now, but when I've done in the past, I've done ESL. It's insane to teach a language that is constantly at war with itself.
Yes, very true. That's I'm wondering what the nationality is for Coburn to have a silent CK.
I could probably figure that out.
My assumption is French just because he's Canadian.
You know what? Well, he spent time at his grandfather's farm outside of Chelsea, Quebec. Quebec feels like maybe there's some
Yeah.
French there.
And but he grew up in Westboro. Is that the same Westboro that pops into my head? I think Westboro Baptist Church.
Oh, I don't think it's this. I mean, at this point, I'm not gonna. I'm like 0 for
I'm
3
not
on this
sure either.
podcast so far. So,
It's been a long time since I've watched that documentary, but I Westboro Baptist Church, I'm pretty sure was South,
I'm
like
gonna go ahead.
American South.
Yeah, well, based off of his politics and his background, he is quite religious,
Yes,
right?
he is.
Very spiritual, religious, but he is not Westboro Baptist Church
Not in the
for
slightest. No.
sure.
But I was very surprised at this song selection, because the first time listening through it, I'm like, there's a little bit of religious undertones here. Now, I learned more about the song to figure out what it's really about, but I was more surprised that this is a Colton selection.
I'm going to say this right now. I'm excited to, of course, talk about the song, Wondering Where the Lions Are. It's one of my, like, favorites, like, in my new pantheon of, like, the songs I go to. It's definitely in the top 10 for me. But it's definitely, that whole record is very Christian, but in a way where it's the kind of, like, religious spiritualism that I can get behind. And I'm happy to talk more about it, but it's a cool, man. Like, I, this is a songwriting that I just, like, I just eat up, just, like,
sure,
doesn't age. It's not cool, but it's so, I don't know.
I love that you said it's not cool.
It's not. And it's, I love it. It's the best kind to me.
And Bruce Coburn, we're not saying you're not cool. It's hip to be square type of cool.
It's funny because I think my, like, dream career of, if I was going to stay in music, like, as in performing in that, my dream career would have been something along the lines of what, like, a Jimmy Buffett / Bruce Coburn sort of thing, where it's just... You got people that like to go to your shows. They like record tapes of like the different versions and give it to people. Basically, I wanted to be a band in the 80s or 70s.
I can see it for you. I could see a crowd full of like a bunch of dudes wearing non-fitting hats that like kind of rest on top with Hawaiian shirts on, high of shorts.
It just becomes like, it's not about gaining new listeners. It's just the old listeners who teach their kids to like you. And so like everything becomes a family event. And you get your own chain of restaurants, which that would have been.
I could see why you would like that.
Yeah. I don't know.
Here's holding on to hope. It could happen, buddy.
We could do it. I feel like we have a lot to talk about before we get to him, though.
We got to address this. So okay. I don't know if Voldy listened to the last episode. I think he just read the episode description. I don't care either way because I think it's a bad band name. Mm-hmm. He's claiming ownership of naming the band.
I
kind of remember it this way, too, because isn't it a Stephen Colbert reference?
It is a Stephen Colbert reference.
Yeah. This was a conversation between you two. I feel like I got just dragged in to Default American.
You did. I mean, the funny thing, as we mentioned last time, this was meant to be, maybe it was initially just Robbie and I, but I think you were always a part of it. I swear, I feel like we were all three. Maybe that's not true.
I was always a henchman in some way or form.
I'm almost certain I came up with that name, but
your dedication to that statement is not Robbie's dedication. He is very adamant.
Of course,
that he came up with that band name.
You know what? I'm willing to give it to him just because I don't have a lot of dogs in the fight, but I'm pretty sure I did. I know I was in that conversation. That's what I'm certain.
Okay. See, that's how I felt like. So you were in the conversation for naming Default American, and I'm a co-writer of losing something.
That is, to my understanding, that was in order to avoid you guys getting that taken down. I don't think anyone's going to come for you guys for posting a cover of Losing Something.
Here's the thing is I had zero concern. The only person who would come after us would be you.
Literally me. Like, no one could sue you on my behalf without... But also, the worst people to sue for royalty in all situations. Like, us suing each other is comical.
Yeah. If you sued us, I would just countersue you so we can balance it out. Everybody keeps their money.
And the lawyers all look at each other like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, we just paid for our lawyers. That's all it was.
If I can do this publicly, I'll just say I give you all my blessing to sell Losing Something
can
for
we use-
millions of dollars.
Can we use different language? Can we just have the rights to the song?
That's
just say that. Just say that. No, I appreciate it because I very much so enjoyed laying that down. And
well, it sounds great. I guess we should explain to everyone else. We're talking about your recent release by Default American, which is the Red Dot.
It should be out by the time this episode comes up.
Very good. So just to clarify for everybody, Default American is just churning out records like no one's business. We have Into the Lion's Mouth, which I keep listening to, and I keep finding new things that I really love about it. It's really cool, man.
Good.
And
thank you. Yes.
Well, you're welcome. You're welcome, buddy. And then the red dot, which I found, like, what are you doing? Just stop making everyone else look bad. Just putting stuff out. You guys recorded this concurrently with Into the Lion's Mouth?
No, not really. It's a compilation. To me, it's a compilation of B-sides, cover songs, you know, but just stuff that we've been working on for a while, and we're finally getting it out there. And then, yes, we did a write a record challenge, which apparently is on Spotify. You can hear the excitement in my voice.
I'm happy to hear that that's going on. I know you told me about it before, the write a record challenge, which we've talked about on this podcast before. It's, I think, one of the cooler things either of us have been around for that we've kind of seen come to fruition. I don't know how big it is now, but I envision a day where it becomes a much bigger, kind of cooler event.
Yeah, kind of like the Bam Margera scavenger hunt.
Yeah, kind of like the Bam Margera.
Nationwide is what I'm getting at. No, but it's a cool little thing that we've had him as a guest, Joe Ziegler, of Lethmore fame, also Pointillism fame. He started this years and years. How long has it been now? Like 12 years?
I want to say the first one was probably 2012, so 13 years.
13 years, yes. And Default American has participated in each one. Colton's participated in quite a few. But it's just a fun little exercise. So if you want to hear what me and my band can come up with within 48 hours, we were featured on another podcast. They featured the song Sailor, but with A-Y.
What's the podcast?
It's Holy Crap Records. Is
that we guys were on before?
Yeah, we've been on it twice, maybe three times before.
Oh, regulars.
Yeah, but they featured it, and what's funny is the guy said they locked themselves in a room and locked themselves in a studio for 48 hours. I'm like, no, we probably total time is a little under 20 hours of actually being a band.
And I know my job is easier when I do a write a record challenge, but I'll just say when I've done the write a record challenge, which at this point I believe I have done twice. I've only done twice, but I loved
way
both
too
times.
Low.
Is that right? Yeah, it is right. But both times it took me eight hours maybe, and I was like eating lunch for a lot of it. Like
I got 10 hours of sleep both times I slept over those 48 hours, you know, and just showed up. We all casually got in, started writing tunes, and then a lot of it was just Robbie editing.
It's such a contrast to, I think, how we're both usually liking to write. The way I write now, and I know this from the record, I am currently, we're very close, everyone. I'm not going to talk about it yet, but it's closer. I heard another round of edits. I just gave you, have you read an email from me this morning?
I did read that email. Well, I skimmed that email. I was trying to find the Zoom link for us to do this.
I know. I'm very excited to hear what you have to think of my instructions. Because I told our mutual friend when I wrote them, I said, Rob's going to be so pissed at me for the instructions I'm giving him.
That's all right. I've done something before that's a little in the Dave Rawlings. Yeah, Dave Rawlings kind of guitar style, which is very Milk Carton Kids anyway. Yeah. I was a little more upset that you said you don't like anything, like only a cover
fine.
Song by him.
He's fine.
Listen to Revelator. Revelator's a fucking great tune.
Maybe, you know what? Maybe he's down the line for us, Dave Rawlings. I really do. Now I feel like I'm throwing shade at Dave Rawlings. I just like Milk Carton Kids.
I have my song selection, but now I just want to do Revelator. We're not going to do Revelator. We'll save it. That's
anywho, no, but it's writing a record challenge is such a cool change up because like I said, writing for this recent record I've done, it's a matter of years for me. And that's also because I'm just not in the same mode I was of wanting to release things and play shows. Yeah. It's just not what I'm doing anymore. But it's like, it takes me so long to even sit down with a guitar to do something. It usually lives in my head for months, maybe even longer than that. Like I have songs that I've written that I've never played on guitar. Yeah. I just know what they sound like.
For example, did you actually listen to the entire episode that we just put up?
The Ellis Dunes?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I thought I did. What am I missing?
Well, okay. Did you listen to it since I posted it yesterday?
Maybe not yet.
Okay, because we get a little bit of a taste of some new Colton Sailor.
Oh, cool. All right. What did we post? I missed it. I didn't hear that
I put
song.
Up a little bit of The Crawl.
Oh.
But the clean vocal version. Now, I didn't let it play. It's how it usually comes in with like a little fade in. You hear a little bit of it. It fades out.
Well, that will not be the version.
It will not be the version, but you got a taste, everybody. You got a taste of electronic Colton.
Oh, no. I didn't know
love
that
that
was
song.
up.
I love that song. So I'm asking your permission now.
I should have listened to that. I don't think I would have said yes.
It's a blip, I promise. I don't think you're gonna quit the podcast over this.
Oh Lord.
It's just a blip. It's mostly the sample, or not the sample, the music.
But
it's playing right now. No, it's not. It's not. All right.
Well, that's cool, man. I'm glad that you guys did that, and I'm happy that it's still going on. So, people, is there something we can share for that, for Write a Record?
I don't know. What do you mean? Just like kind of put it in the
like,
description?
Is there any kind of like centralized space for it? Probably not anymore.
Yeah,
it used
I don't
to be on
think
Facebook.
So. Yeah, I feel like we probably just found out, like Joe probably just shot Robbie a text going, hey, we're doing it March 29th. Let's go.
Oh, Lord.
And Joe's was really, Leftmore's was really good too.
Nice. Okay. Well then, check that out. Remember, we'll link to their record.
Yeah. Leftmore, what is it? War 25.
Man, that's wild.
I appreciate how mature that album title was, because ours is stupid, like kind of poking fun at everybody, and just Leftmore put it up, War 25. I'm like, yeah, Write a Record Challenge 2025. That's classy.
I don't feel like I've
A
done
class
enough.
A.
To tell people that mine are Write a Record challenges. I think, so I'm always afraid they're going to notice a quality drop off. Although what also upsets me is sometimes I think, man, some of those records are better than the ones I spent longer writing.
Yeah, I understand. There is something to be said for that. We have a few songs that on throughout the Write a Record challenges. I go, that's some of my best work. And it was just, got to write it. We got 20 minutes to, you know, finish it.
Man. Well, everybody next year, I guess it's going to be hard to know, but we'll try to get Joe to publicize it with us or something when we're doing this podcast next year, which
and hopefully next time around you'll participate.
We'll see. I didn't want to flood the market. That's the reality. I would
flood
love
the
to do
market.
It. It's not a, I don't have any concerns about my ability to do it, but I just, the Colton Sailor dollar is low.
Just when you say flood the market, I'm going like, this is a puddle, dude. It's going to be fine. Just participate.
It's like people barely get their ankles wet. Like, ew, that's nasty. Man, I want to do a quick, I'm curious if you've seen either of these movies. I have two quick music-based movie reviews I want to throw at you.
Okay.
I saw two kind of biopics in the last probably 2 weeks.
Do you say biopic? I say biopic.
I think biopic is the way. See, now we have a Coburn-Cockburn situation here. Anywho, I saw two biopics
in
the last 2 weeks. I saw A Complete Unknown, which I'm not sure if you've seen it.
I have not seen it, by Bob Dylan.
But Bob, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right. You're doing it. You're nailing it this Sunday afternoon. You. And the second was Bohemian Rhapsody, the Queen film.
Yes.
And I'm not sure if you're familiar with that one.
I'm familiar with both of them. I haven't seen
it. Okay. Well, I don't know. I don't know if you've seen a lot of biopics in the past. Have you seen any?
Sure. I saw the, what was it? Walk Hard, the story, Legend of Dewey Cox.
Mm-hmm.
Which, great movie. I wish it was true.
Yep.
No, so I saw the one with Joaquin Phoenix when he did Johnny Cash.
Right. Walk the Line.
Yeah, Walk the Line.
It's probably the most successful recently.
It feels like that's the one that started it, like really kicked it off. It's like you're going to go and see it in cinema as opposed to it being like a VH1 television special.
Yeah, because they used to do those all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And I remember they had like a Meatloaf one when I was younger that I thought was insane.
I watched the Temptations one a few months ago.
That's pretty. That and the Michael Jackson one, if you're They
Oh,
did.
yeah, the Jackson Five.
That's right. Oh yeah, it is Jackson
Yeah.
5.
Yeah.
I the scene where they make Michael go get the switch, the that is like still scarred in my brain. I mean, good Lord, man. That went hard. But anyway, these were, I thought, a complete unknown, if anyone's familiar. I was actually very impressed with Timothée Chalamet, and I don't know where I am with him as an actor all the time, but he was pretty legit, man. It's a very cool movie, just for like, it's more of a concert film than I was expecting. And we've talked about Bob Dylan, and I think this
We
kind of
talked about
covers.
Timothée Chalamet playing Bob Dylan a little
We
bit.
have. And I was skeptical. And I'll still say this. I still don't think I would ever pay money to
No
hear him
reason to.
sing Bob Dylan songs. That's
No
insane.
reason to.
But they covered some of my favorites. I Was Young When I Left Home, one of my
There you
favorite acoustic Bob Dylan songs. He does a great version of that. And I can't remember the actress's name, but the one who plays Joan Baez, she's extraordinary.
Nice.
So, so good.
I don't know her name.
She was
Should we
in.
give her some flowers?
Let me look it up. But I know she was in The Good Cop, which I don't think anyone else has seen on Netflix, but I thought she was pretty good in that.
I'm
Yeah,
one of them.
Monica Barbaro.
Way to go,
That's
Monica.
it. And she's great. And of course, Edward Norton is Pete Seeger, man. I love Pete
Yeah.
Seeger. It was cool. I still don't, and maybe this is kind of also related to Bohemian Rhapsody, where I don't know what you think about when movies try to cover the creative process of songwriting, like if they get it right, because I think it's like with writing too. Like those mediums to me don't transfer over. Like it's not exciting to watch someone write a song.
Yeah.
I don't know if you agree.
Sometimes it's inaccurate. It's kind of made for cinema,
Oh
for
yeah.
certain things kind of get twisted and changed.
It's so hard because, and here's the thing about Bohemian Rhapsody. I know when it came out, a lot of people were very critical of it. Just from a cinema perspective, I don't know if how good of a film it was. And the whole treatment of it's kind of tailor-made for just hitting like high points of their careers. And it's very like they're sitting in the studio, they're fighting, and all of a sudden the bass is like do 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 do. And then all of a sudden, like, what's that? And it's just like the moments are so manufactured to be like, and like there's a scene of guy who plays Freddie Mercury sitting in a chair. They're at this farm. They're about to write, I think it's A Night at the Opera. They're recording it, and he's sitting there and he's got his notepad and he's writing like, "Mama, just kill the man." And he's like, "I did it." Like it's like they're trying to make those moments feel compelling. I think some of the studio stuff is kind of cool because I don't know a lot about Queen. I don't know what your mileage is. I don't think we've ever really talked about Queen before.
No, we haven't really. And it will come. It
Maybe.
will come.
Maybe. But I think as like musicians and as like people in the studio that did really cool stuff, it's neat to see some of it. But it was very, in other ways, just like super manufactured. But the performances, I want to say this. If you're like me, where whenever an actor plays an instrument that they clearly don't know how to play, and it's really weird, it's like an uncanny valley situation. And the guys who play in that band for Queen, I know I looked it up. I think some of them have some experience, but the guy who plays Brian May is extraordinary. Like just his ability to like actually kind of mirror what Brian May is doing. And he's even gone on to say, he's like, "I don't know how to play lead guitar." He's like, "I just literally mimicked what he does," which.
The what is it, the drummer in That Thing You Do, he does a great job. Always impressed because he learned how to play drums for that. And when he does a little jazz part, I'm like, you know what? I think in trying to be a method actor, you learned how to play drums. I
That's
think
pretty
that's
cool.
just what went down. But there's another thing. What is it? Like sports films. Whenever you see like an actor throw a baseball, and it's supposed to be they're good at throwing a baseball,
Yeah.
but us being two people who played baseball, not saying we're special at it, but when you see somebody throw a baseball poorly, it stands out to you.
It's really bad. I'm trying to think of some of the worst ones I've seen. I've always heard Wesley Snipes in Major League is really bad because he's actually not very athletic. And so him doing
And the
anything in that.
comedies, it's okay, I guess. I actually, believe it or not, I watched Rookie of the Year the other night just to fall asleep to.
Yeah.
And still an entertaining film. Nobody looks like they're playing, except for Bobby Bonilla, Barry Bonds, the the ones who come in as little cameos from true baseball players. But everybody else, it's just none of you know how to play this game.
Man, I think Kevin Costner, I don't
he's
know
the best
seen,
one.
Yeah, for love of the game, that's pretty good.
Yeah, he knows how he played baseball. You can tell he played baseball. Yeah, but yeah. You know, what is it in The Natural where he plays catch with his son?
Feel the Dreams.
Well, Field of Dreams, but I'm also thinking of The Natural.
Oh, he plays catch with his son.
Yeah, go figure. In all these 90s baseball classics, there's going to be a game of catch. Or what does he say in Field of Dreams? You want to have a catch?
Yeah,
nobody
yeah.
ever says that.
No one's
That's
ever
our,
said that.
Nobody's ever said that. You want to have a catch?
There's a lot of things no one's ever said in that movie that the people say. But it's good. I don't know. I mean, it's the schmaltziest movie ever. But
I love Field of Dreams.
It's just nice.
Well, I mean,
it's
shit,
just...
you just brought up For the Love of the Game. That is one of the ickiest story. Like, the storyline is terrible.
I know. I'm not a fan of For Love of the Game, just for the record, everyone.
I'm going to fall asleep to it tonight. I have it downloaded onto my hard drive.
But before we move on, I want to put you on the spot. What is the best, we'll just call it like music band songwriting related film that you could think of? Is it That Thing You Do?
Yeah, probably for me. I love that movie. I love that movie.
Almost Famous is a
good one. Yeah.
I actually think this is kind of cheating because it is a band film, but it's not. Green Room with Anton. I don't think you would have ever seen it. But
yeah,
for people who know, if you know, you know, Green Room is extraordinary. It's a horror film about a punk band that ends up playing a show at a skinhead like bar.
Okay.
And they witness a murder right before they're about to leave. And so they end up getting trapped in the green room behind the main stage while all these skinhead Nazis are trying to get in to kill them. And it is amazing.
I bet you're a horror film guy, so I understand.
But as like the early parts of it, when they're in the band, it rings true in a lot of ways. I'm amazed they got everything so right.
Just another one. I've already kind of brought it up, but seriously, I do love Walk Hard by the Legend of
Duke. I've still never seen it.
Watch the expanded version. It's so fun. I don't want to. I can't overhype it for you because we all know what type of damage that does. if you tell somebody it's the greatest thing ever, I guarantee it won't be the greatest thing ever for them.
My head goes, we'll see about that.
Yeah.
I know that there is an upcoming 4 different films about each member of the Beatles.
I can't wait, obviously. I can't wait to see
that. I think if this is still going on in like the 2 to 3 years it's going to take for that to happen, which I think it will be.
I think so too.
We'll have to save our big Beatles buildup.
Who knows what the format will be at that point in time.
We're gonna listen to 2 minutes of each song every 2 weeks.
We're just gonna discuss choruses. No longer full songs.
Oh, Lord.
I believe you said you had some cultural rubbishes because the Dodgers have lost now.
They have
lost twice.
The Dodgers are 9-2. Well, I guess a lot of these are sports related, which I don't always expect. If you're listening to us before, you know that we do have a lot of a sports talk in us. And
we like sports.
Right now is kind of the golden time where basketball's ramping up, baseball. Yep. Is in its early stages, which to me is the most fun to watch.
I'm not a huge football fan. I do love my Rams, but I'm not huge on football.
No, I don't think either of us are. So this is probably the busiest we are with that. NBA wise, as much as I hate to say this, I don't see the Warriors getting past whatever the kind of initial playoff run, like whatever that first series is. Maybe.
I mean, I hope because it very well could be like my Lakers, your Warriors.
I don't know what that looks like in a series.
I think it'd be a great series. I think it would go at least 6 games.
Yeah. I think it's the Thunder's year. I think it is.
Could be, but wait. I'm assuming if the Lakers fell short, then
beating the Thunder now is not a, like, they're resting guys. I'm guessing they're not wanting to.
It was full-fledged. It was our Lakers versus their Thunders.
But there's no reason for them to play full out in a end of the season. They've got everything wrapped up.
I guess.
I'm sorry. I feel like I'm taking this
away
from you.
I'm pretty sure losing by 27 and getting their butts kicked the entire game was not their game plan, or and even during the game, there had to have been some pride of, wait, hold on, what's happening here?
We'll see. We'll see. Anywho, I do think it's their year.
I'll say this much. If it comes down to OKC and the Celtics, please, OKC, represent.
I saw something that I don't like to spread bad sports energy all the time, but someone said, why is it that whenever Jason Tatum does anything, it's the corniest version ever? He's an extremely corny, which is not necessarily a bad thing.
He's an unbelievable basketball player, but yeah, there's just something about, there's just no excitement. He doesn't do things like Ja Morant has an excitement of freaking.
That's one Anthony, way to put it.
Well, yeah. Okay. Anthony Edwards. There's like this, I don't know. There's just something to his movement.
They have a swagger to them.
Yeah.
That's more in the marketing side of things than anything. Jason Tatum, I remember this was like years ago when he was still kind of a joke in the league because mm-hmm. they would get to the playoffs and then just kind of choke out. And he like posted, I don't know if we covered this before, but he posted that video of him texting Kobe Bryant's phone and saying, you know, Kobe, just wanted you to know.
I'm doing this for you.
All I could think of is, man, he's not going to text you back. What are you doing?
Yes, obviously that. But there's also like, you're texting a Laker.
And I'm
pretty sure Kobe Bryant hates the Celtics. Don't get me wrong. He did take Jason Tatum under his wing and helped him out with stuff. But he still hates the Celtics. He's rolling in his freaking grave.
Just the worst thing to do to put out in the public. It makes you look so weird. And here's the thing. When it comes to like texting or calling people the best way, that part I get. Like I know people who have done that. And it makes total sense to me. It's just everything about what he did. I was like, man, that's so, Jason.
not the best look. A little, but he did at least have a personal relationship. I can't help but react as a Lakers fan. You don't text our guy that the Celtics are going to win. No.
Oh, Lord. No. Well, and I don't think they did. I think they lost that year.
Think they lost to your – was that the year that they lost to Golden State?
It might have been, which is great. That game, I think it was game 5 or 6, Curry in Boston just ripping their hearts out. That was pure.
You know how much I had already loved Steph Curry. I love Steph Curry. That was me being a Warriors fan. I was going, okay, I'm all in on the Warriors. You have to beat the Celtics.
I think if they go far, it's as much as it's like the Jimmy Butler, like him turning that team around. I think it's Curry. I think the conversation will have to change around him if he gets them to the finals, even.
Yeah.
I think this team is not supposed to be in the finals. The Warriors, as they're constructed right now. When Brandon Pajemski, but he's like shooting a bunch of threes and like 25, 26 points in these last 3 games. I'm like, what's happening?
Yeah, he was a Lakers fucking stopper the other day. Like, what's going on? You're not supposed to be our concern.
I know.
But Steph, I got to give him a lot of credit. He's, over the last like 4 years, I feel like it's the best Steph Curry I've seen.
Which is wild because he's definitely lost a step when it comes to like his ability to make separation in that. It's not the same, but his shooting somehow I think is better.
Yeah. Somehow. That's unbelievable to think of. Yes. All right, everybody, we'll stop.
All right. We should probably take our break. Yes. I think the fact that like I've been pronouncing his name wrong told me this episode is not off to a good start.
We're doing great. I don't like your confidence when we finish the first segment. So I was just like, call it.
We got to get out of here. baby guy.
Baby guy. That's right. I'm glad you brought that back.
I brought it back, baby guy. All right. We're still in denial about the Blamley. We're going to keep posting chit show ads. I hope we are. Are we doing it?
Is that we are, but that will be next segment.
All right.
Up next, we got Bass Blown and Siren Songbook. Take it away.
If you're looking for fun events, awesome music, and enjoyable podcasts, then look no further. The Baseblown Entertainment family has you covered. With so many talented people in our community, it was only right that we not only bring you events, but all sorts of awesome entertainment. Follow Baseblown on social media or join our Discord community to stay updated and engaged in everything. That is at Baseblown on social media and discord.gg/baseblown for our Discord. Baseblown Entertainment, bringing you more than just bass in your face.
Welcome to the Siren Songbook, a podcast where we discuss female artists, their music, their history, and the impact they've made on the music industry. Join us each month as we pick a new inspirational artist and celebrate exactly what it is that makes them so magical.
You can listen to new episodes of The Siren Songbook on Spotify every last Wednesday of the month. The Siren Songbook, a baseball and entertainment podcast.
All right, we're back. It is
we are.
Very hot in this room I'm recording in.
It's a nice warm day. It's nice and sunny here.
You see me start to sweat more and then I just don't respond. Just call Casey. Just tell her.
She'll answer the phone.
She'll probably answer at this point.
Well, so I don't know. I've been using her nickname a little too much lately.
This doesn't have to go on the pod, but it was...
We just said welcome back.
I know. Oh, shit. Oh, God. Okay. But we were waiting. Her dad was coming over to have dinner with us, and he called my phone to get let in.
Smart.
And he was like, well, because I didn't think Casey would pick up. And Casey and I both looked at him like, that's the first time anyone has ever done
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Oh. Me. And I picked up. I let him in. It was great.
You have been a lot better, actually, the last couple of times I've called you. Like, whoa. Oh, hey.
Man, I'm getting there.
You're growing.
Or devolving, I'm not sure. Man, Bruce Coburn. I gotta be honest, it's gonna take me a while to say Coburn.
Hey.
It's gonna be
I'm so happy. You introduced me to Bruce Coburn and I got to introduce you to his name.
How to say his name correctly.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
In my defense.
Who's gonna read that and say, oh, it's clearly Coburn?
Exactly. And it must be French, in which case I also take back by criticism of the English language, although I still think English language is hard to teach, but
I mean, we adopt from so many languages. So
it's so funny because I don't even know like how I even came across him was so random and so like, you know, one of those things where I was in the back of my dad's truck and I want to say, I don't know what year it was. I believe it was somewhere around 2013, 2014, okay. maybe even 15. I'm not sure, but I was in the back of my dad's truck. He was listening to satellite radio and it just popped up and I had no idea who sang it. I'd never heard it before. And I was immediately, because being a lyrics driven person and yeah. just like always, you know, just the way that people choose to use space in a song to express themselves. It's always something that's mm-hmm. interesting to me. I'm always down to hear whatever. And it was so striking to me. I don't even know the quality of the song. It just had this very serene, beautiful, like reggae tinge. There's like that, like that off stroke river.
There's kind of that like Paul Simon reggae vibe to it.
It is. And I actually think if you're anyone is a fan of Graceland, this record especially, but I think others too, he definitely has, I mean, world music. Like I think he spent a lot of time in South America and Africa, and
yes,
just like Paul Simon. It's really cool in that way, but it's also very like, I would say, James Taylor-esque kind of folk songwriting.
Very much. You know who his vocals reminded me immediately of? Jackson Browne.
Mm-hmm.
It was immediately that, but it's like the way his voice kind of flows throughout the song is very conversational. It's so loose in the melodic structure of how he sings it.
Yeah.
That was something that popped me initially, but I'm glad you brought that up because I was wondering where this came from. I wasn't sure if this was something you heard as like a teenager or even as a little kid.
Yeah, this was like in my, at this point, God, it's hard to say, early 30s. I used to be in my early 30s. In my early 30s. Maybe not, maybe a little early, maybe like 20s. But
yeah, based off the date you said, I would say you're probably mid to late 20s.
Just like running home and Googling where the lines are. And like finding his name from that. And it's just cool, man. I think it's something I don't want to be too like old man yells at cloud in this episode, but like when we like all the names we just mentioned, like Jackson Browne, and I was thinking even like John Denver, which I know people's mileage on him changes, but sure. I love John Denver.
I love tunes by John Denver. And that's not even calling out his discography.
No, it's just...
I'm not familiar with his discography.
I understand what you mean.
Yeah.
But it's just not a kind of singer-songwriter that gets elevated anymore. And...
At least not here.
Not here. Not nowadays. And I think it's just kind of a cool... It's probably... When I think of my inspirations, it's where I go to. It's like... And it's Tom Petty as well. It's like that whole, like, 80s... Like late 70s, 80s, like singer-songwriter kind of deal. It's just really, really cool to me. And I don't know about you, when it comes to like dealing with things like anxiety and panic, like this is one of those songs where the timing couldn't be better.
Yeah.
I don't know.
For you personally.
Well, I think for everyone, but also for me.
Okay.
I mean,
okay. I see what you mean. I see what you mean.
Well, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, because I was really surprised when I first listened to it, because I just got a whole bunch of like the religious undertones to it.
Totally.
You know, when I was hearing Wondering Where the Lions Are, now I know where he got that from. But immediately I was like, Daniel and the Den of Lions? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Waiting for Eternity?
So,
why does Colton love this so much?
So maybe just a slight, and I don't know, we've done this before with artists, but maybe for Bruce Cockburn, it's even more important to kind of do a slight like context. So he's a singer-songwriter. He's Canadian. Another reason I wanted to do him. Hey, we're positive relationships with Canada. We love That's our right. Canadian buddies.
We're Californian hoping.
Yeah, we are. We come in peace. But I told you that about that Eddie Vedder comment. Yes. Or not Eddie Vedder. Good Lord. I am like 0-8 today.
Yes, Eddie Vedder of Pearl Jam fame. No, but Eddie Van Halen.
Eddie Van Halen.
And I've heard that there's some people who think that Eric Clapton might have said it.
Right, which is funny. It's going back to beginning of this podcast where you say that our mutual friend disputes that I came up with the name Default American. It's kind of nice to be in one of those situations where the story is different, because that's just the way rock and roll history used to be. It's more folklorish. Man. I like it. But yeah, the question is...
I hope you don't expect that turns into some folklore. Like, was it Colton Saylor or Voldemort who named... Default American.
Probably a police report, not a... But it's one of either then Eric Clapton or... It would be funnier to me if it was Eric Clapton. Or Eddie Van Halen was asked, what does it feel like to be the best guitarist in the world? And they said, I don't know. You'll have to ask Bruce Cockburn, which I don't know what your thoughts are. I think this song is not the song to pick that out.
It depends on how you look at it. The right hand is incredible on this song. I started trying to learn it, so we'll get into like kind of a natural music breakdown.
Yeah,
in a little bit.
I mean, I've definitely tried and stopped, and I went.
It takes a lot of work. I don't think either one of us are really proficient at finger picking.
No, not I'm. There was a point where I thought I was actually getting better, and then I kind of just stopped. But like Travis picking in that, it is.
Yeah, that's what this is. Yeah. Definitely for this song, it's a Travis picking that little like boom, boom, boom. Boom,
yeah,
boom,
beautiful boom, little bass. Yeah. But he's
doing it with your thumb, everybody. A little bit of the music theory there.
Yay. Gonna try to like express what Bruce Cockburn is like career wise, he has a lot of records. I have not heard all of them. I mean, clearly, I didn't even know how to say his name correctly. I am a casual fan who has like been slowly unpacking some of his discography, and there's a lot there to unpack, but
slowly getting initiated.
He's very political minded, very much about like equality, has a lot of experience in traveling, experience kind of drawing those influences into his music. I think some of his best songs that I've heard are like anti-war songs, pro-environment songs, just kind of cool. Yeah. Just Waiting for a Miracle, I think is great. I think probably this is not his most famous song. I think this is one of his first big singles in the U.S.
Yeah, this is a U.S. big single. I think this is the highest he's charted.
In 1979, which...
Yeah, 79.
That's the other thing. It's like hearing the song was in 1979. I'm like, parts of it feel so contemporary to me. It's kind of a crazy...
Interesting you say contemporary. I would picture like more like kind of it would have taken place later into the 80s.
Maybe that's what I meant. Maybe my sense of contemporary is off. But yeah, it is. It's
I didn't
it's
hear any auto
tune song. Well, yeah, that would be. Who knows what it sound like now? But yeah, it's. I think he's. Lovers in a Dangerous Time is one I think is probably the bigger of his, which is also great. But it's just like a very cool, not ostentatious. His songs are very kind of workman in a lot of ways. Yeah. And you mentioned, I think this album especially is maybe where it starts the most. From what I've read of like kind of injecting a lot of kind of Christian mysticism, spiritual elements to his songwriting, which I just want to say, I think it's really beautifully done on this record.
Yeah.
In this song.
Yeah. I think it's done in a very tasteful way to where it doesn't alienate a listener just because there might be undertones. It doesn't alienate a listener just because there might not be enough you know, yeah. Christian. Like it fits right into a perfect mold to where you can take from this song without having any form of being devout or whatnot. You know, it's non-denominational while it is coming from a Christian man.
It's very much the way I would put it that I've really appreciated is a lot of his, and I'm thinking especially in this record, which is Dancing in the Dragon's Jaws, everyone, if you're curious. Across that record in this song, it's a lot of like a small individual recognizing this bigger part outside of themselves that they are also somehow a part of. Like that to me is a kind of ongoing theme of the record. And I think this song's a nice example of it, where you kind of take solace in how small you are compared to the workings of the universe. And of course, for Bruce Cockburn, that's God, right? In a kind of capital G form. But it's a lot of the ways through like nature, right? Even this song, it's so nature obsessed in all the imagery. And it's, I mean, that's like, I'm not going to do a whole lecture, everybody, on romanticism. But if you've studied the romantics in poetry and transcendentalism, a lot of that in both ways is about finding God in nature. And finding like this big spiritual entity. And I don't know, those kinds of things to me are, it's hard to fault any of that. I think my thoughts on organized religion are pretty well publicized.
Yes, yes, yes.
You've actually ended a song.
Organized religion, yes, specifically. Yes. That was something that I really liked about, because I mean, well, so all that aside, finally discovering what the song's actually about.
Yeah.
You know, where he has a conversation with a relative, I believe it is.
Some dinner party or some, specific about who's having what conversation, but yeah, keep going.
Yeah, yeah, and they end off discussing, you know, like China might be going to war with USSR. And naturally, that gave him some negative feelings, gave him a little bit of anxiety. And he went to sleep and had a dream in which right outside of his door, there were lions. And right when I read that, I'm like, oh, okay, well, the first verse leading into the chorus makes a lot more sense to me, even though it made sense to me before. But I just, like I said, I kind of applied it to his faith.
Yeah, it's funny because we just finished talking about Let It Be and Paul McCartney.
Here we like, are back to dreams.
Having his, and I think at that point we both said, well, that's not a thing. Like, come on, man, that's not real.
I couldn't help but be skeptical on that. But this one, I mean, to start off the song with sun's up, looks okay, the world survives into another day, and I'm thinking about eternity. Now, the thinking about eternity, I think, is something that might have come up later, but just immediately with that, the sun's up, it's okay. Well, like, okay, that's the beginning of his anxiety kind of subsiding. Like, wait, okay, we're not, it's not over.
And that's where I think I said before, as a song about like a kind of solve to anxiety. And I think especially when you're talking about like geopolitical, like just chaos, which again, how timely that is at this point.
Isn't it always timely though?
I think it is his viewpoint through Christianity of kind of allowing the individual to just kind of relent to what are bigger forces at play, but also finding a kind of peace in what you can control. Like that to me is what is so perfectly manifested in this song. And so it's like, you know, I have that thought. It's one of my things now. I wake up and outside of my own personal stress or what's going on or what I'm concerned about with the world around me, it's such a perfect lyric to be like, sun's up. Looks okay. It's so beautiful.
It that type of lyric can only work. Or I shouldn't say only, but specifically will work better in this type of vibe of a song. Because like we said, it's already got a little bit of that islandy comfort, peaceful vibe to it. You know, it's where when I first heard it, I was thinking he didn't have a care in the world anyway. I'm just like, sun's up. It's okay. Just like, you're feeling good. You're feeling good right now. I didn't realize you were waking up from anxiety. I thought you, the day before, you were already like, sun's up. It's okay. Just every day starts this way for him. Like, I'm going to find the positive in everything.
I think it's where when you have a certain kind of mastery over language and like when you know, like you have like a lot of the verses that he has coming later up, right? Where he's going to hit you with just it feels so workman and it feels so small, but like the imagery that he's able to get across in those little couplets he has, right? Because mm-hmm. the end of each verse is the same, more or less. It's that folk refrain, right? Yep. Got my mind on eternity, together in eternity, and then yep. the ecstasy, right? It's got a hold of me. So he's got two lines to work with yep. each time. And I don't know about you, but I love those. I love couplets because sure. it's a little compact. You can get a lot out. And he is so good at that. Like the line that comes, it's the third verse. Actually, it's the fourth verse. Up among the firs where it smells so sweet, or down in the valley where the river used to be. And then it just goes into the refrain again. It's, I mean, I don't know how you feel about it, but those are the things I obsess with. I love that shit.
I think it fits into, or especially the first two lines of it, it fits into kind of that, the nature reference, you know, and I mean, down in the valley where the rivers used to be, or the river used to be, I'm going like, I don't know if that's kind of speaking towards climate issues, or if that's speaking towards like this valley was carved out by a river to where I'm like, I don't know. The vibe is there.
It's, but I think even there's definitely the thematic of there's a kind of current day, like day to day thing that we can obsess over. And then there's mm-hmm. the way that like ancient earth time works mm-hmm. where whole like geographies are carved out over what for us is just like centuries and centuries. And for the earth itself is like a blink of an eye. Like there's yeah. the relativeness of how we think of time. It's, that to me is where in a couplet he's able to get that, and that's cool, man.
That's yeah, well, it's the ability of saying so much with less.
Yeah,
that's what makes a song such a cool folk song, to where it doesn't have the Bob Dylan like, okay, I gotta say a whole bunch of, this song is a folk song, but it's so minimalistic. I mean, the song in general, musically, very minimalistic, but the lyrics are, I mean, when it hits the chorus, we got one line.
Yeah.
Unless you want to include uh-huh.
It, you know? And those are some good uh-huhs. They are.
Oh, for sure. But yeah, just doing the little shout back and over just a... I mean, the song's only three chords.
Yeah.
You know, it's just freaking... I mean, I'm just going to cover it now. Like, I love that it's in drop D with the capo on the second fret, and mm-hmm. he's still playing an E major, which for anybody who plays guitar, E major, easy to play without a capo on it. But the fact that he does that to have the song only be E, A6, but it's really an A major if you're going to play it nice and simplified. Mm-hmm. And then the chorus is just, what is it, F sharp minor 7, sorry. F sharp minor 7 back to an E. F sharp minor 7 back to an E. And then let's go to the verse. E, A6, E, A6. Nice and simple. His right hand is, of course, like, that's the beauty of playing picking like he does. He makes it sound so much bigger.
And as I've mentioned, I think, and I don't even know even on this song, and that's where I think being a kind of like maestro at his instrument, mm-hmm. like, it's the confidence of like not flexing that like in his songwriting. Mm-hmm. Like it's like he has the ability if he needs to, but in any song I've heard of his, he's not shredding anything. He's not, it's just, it's composition wise where I think stuff gets really cool for me. But
yeah, it was just such a clever move to put the capo on the second fret, throw it in drop D and play in E major to me. Like I really, really want to dive into more of the music there, but I will fight it.
People asked for it, man.
They did. I wanted to start diving into where it's like, so an E major is if you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, that's the E major scale. And then you just go 1, 3, 5, 1, 5, 3, 1. Those are the three notes that go into an E major chord. There we go. There's my nerd out.
That's our new Theory with Rob segment, everybody. And that was Theory with Rob.
There we go. And moving on.
Yeah, I don't know. So my thing about the music is, like you mentioned, it's not what I was expecting, knowing like when my first kind of like introduction to him, right? Mm-hmm. I think it was because the music felt so counter to what I was expecting it to be. Like when the song starts, like it is kind of straight ahead, like folk, very traditional. And I think the fact that it's so smoothly integrated to, I mean, it definitely has like reggae, it's like all like on whatever, like the downbeat or the or the what's it, the offbeat, right?
Yeah, the offbeat on the twos and fours. So right. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
And I know about you. I think the drums on this song are great.
Oh, that drum fill that comes in. Yeah, right on the it's either on the second or the fourth of the 1, 2, 3, 4. But yeah, that drum fill is perfect. And it's really the only moment it gets. You know, yeah. Which we both have discussed it so many times with drums, that is tacked. You know, of course it's gonna keep a nice solid backbeat, but just that one moment is perfect.
I think there's only been officially one song that's like in a kind of reggae, like hitting on the offbeat mode that I've recorded with you. And that's the one reggae song I ever wrote. Wait, I don't even remember the name of it.
I don't remember it either, but that was a good tune. I remember liking it.
We'll have to find that.
That was a good tune. I remember liking it.
I think we both remember liking it, but also I have no idea. But it was great because I know you played bass on it. I asked you to, and you did a great job.
Thanks.
And I got to play drums on it, and that was probably the most fun I had recording a song before, because it's the syncopation on the hi-hat. It's all like you get into such cool grooves when you're playing on that offbeat, and then the fills are so much fun because you can kind of do whatever you want.
Yes,
that's cool.
Absolutely. There is a magic for doing that. Gent, there's just something beautiful about it, and just so relaxing. It had to be written on a beach. You know, the first time that somebody ever utilized that, it had to be on a beach, because it's just an immediate like, I feel good.
Man, it is. Also hearing the rest of this record, I don't know, did you listen to anything else of his?
Nope.
I actually kind of like that, because it's...
Yeah, I was going full-fledged into this song.
I appreciate that, man. It's, I don't even think on the rest of the record. Like, there are some cool, like, instrumental tracks too, but it's far more... I think there's actually kind of weird, cool jazz, proggy stuff on the rest of the record. This is one of the more tame composition-wise, I think.
Yeah. That's something I ran into trying to learn how to play the song. The guy who was teaching it in the video I was watching, like, Bruce Cockburn is, again, he dropped Cockburn. And I'm like, okay, this is establishing it. But he was just like, as much as all of his contemporaries are going to say he's an amazing guitarist, this song isn't really going to do that. But immediately, I'm like, all right, if that's the case, and this song is one of the simpler ones, the right hand is going, man. It is very precise and disciplined, you know?
I have never, if we're talking about the finger picking now, I think I can name a couple of songs I've written that use really basic finger picking, and I don't think I could ever play them live. Like, I don't want to. Like,
it's tough. Yeah. I have one song. Well, Default American has one song. Famous Fool, where I do that, and I performed it once. There's a YouTube video out there if anybody wants to watch it. Or I was amazed that I got through the whole song, because it just gets exhausting. Because it's the repetition that gets so difficult with it, and especially in this song, it's repetition. He's just doing that. I watched a live performance to where he's talking in between, where he's going like, "Well, if you know this next part, participate," and he doesn't break stride at all. And I'm like, man, that's really hard. And this, you got to be precise. If you're going to play something like that, you got to nail it.
I think that to me is the kind of cool tension of what makes the song, even though it's very straightforward, right? Lyrically and musically, this is where I think it's such a perfect match. Like, there's it's such a high wire act, because it does feel, it lulls you into sleep. Right. It's very relaxed. And even lyrically, right, it's very about peace, but it's also about the end of the world. And the music.
I love that statement. That's perfect.
It is. It's about, like, confronting the fact that we'll wake up tomorrow and there's just nothing here. And I think musically, there's so much going into making it feel so relaxed. Yeah. That to me is what's kind of a miracle about it.
Sure. When I first listened to it, just because you were a fan, like, I'm going to read about Bruce Cockburn, and it's going to turn out he's like this diehard atheist going like, no, I'm wondering about eternity. I'm not saying there is eternity, but that's how much the lyrics still left itself available to different interpretations. I'm wondering about eternity. It's not saying I believe in eternity. It's just, it creates that kind of like, I'm wondering about existence. I'm wondering about what's going to go on.
I think so. And I think there's a kind of, I think the word I would use is surrender. Like, there's a lot of that in others of his. I just want to quickly name check at least a couple of those. I think the one that I, funny enough, I think if I was doing the same thing like today, which one we were going to follow on, it would be Northern Lights. But there's a lot of that. And it's all the same formula of like tons of really great like imagery-based songwriting. And it's kind of like surrendering to the vastness that is the world. Mm-hmm. And when I hear Got My Mind on Eternity or Together in Eternity, I mean, it changes, right? Contextual mm-hmm. each verse, but it's all very, it gives you a sense of scale that I think is really helpful. And if you're thinking about like anxiety, right? I mean, everyone has different ways of thinking through what anxiety is for them. But if there's a sense of like scale of kind of recognizing how heightened certain moments feel and how you can kind of compare them to others and then start to be like, you know what, this thing I'm super worried about that's like driving mm-hmm. me crazy doesn't really matter, right? Yeah. It's that like letting go. And that's so hard to do when you're
it is
stuck in that awful eating mode.
God, it's funny you say the word. This is too straight, because I was saying that about Let It Be, you know, mm-hmm. to where if you're feeling anxiety, that's a good song to listen to. This is a perfect follow-up to it, or I would put this on if I'm feeling anxiety.
I don't want to get your head any bigger, but the other song I'd listen to, Anxiety by Default American.
Oh, I don't recommend it, guys. That one is not about easing your way out of anxiety. That is about full-fledged diving into that anxiety.
You have some good ones, though, I think. I mean, it's a hard... It's a hard thing to write about, I think. But I'm curious.
I think you nailed it. It's a balancing act, yeah.
Is there anything in this song that doesn't work for you?
I would say on the first listen, mm-hmm. I remember when the song ended, I kind of just went, oh, that was it? You know, like, okay, it's over. Like, I was just more surprised that there wasn't, like, a musical interlude. I shouldn't say that means it doesn't work for me. Mm-hmm. It just, it might take a couple of listens, because it did for me. It took a couple of listens for me to really turn into where all of a sudden, you know, I'm driving around at work. Wondering where the lines are, wondering where the
yeah.
lines are. And just like humming it to myself. But it's not an immediate earworm, you know?
And isn't that, this is where, again, I don't know. I feel like I'm coming across too much like this, where it's like the good old days. But it's crazy to me that this is then the song that charts. Like, because he has other songs that I think are way, like, it would make sense. It would be kind of more of a radio hit. I think Lovers in a Dangerous Time first comes to mind. And that's a really good song, by the way. But the fact that this song just charts, right, at all. Like, it's, there's a hook, but it isn't much of anything. I agree with you. And that's, I think I've mentioned my theory on this Starbucks record, which is like mm-hmm. the record that an older singer-songwriter puts out. And it's just like, it's something they want to do. And it's very casual. And there's nothing about it. Like, if that was their first record they ever put out, no one would ever know about them. Because it's only based in songwriting. There's nothing about it trying to grab attention. That's the stuff that I always get obsessive over. Because that's just like pure, it feels pure to me.
It does feel pure. Like, it's watching him perform it acoustically. I'm like, all right, this is like campfire. This is beach campfire. Like, I agree with you that it's pure, but it's something to where, I could walk through a coffee shop, which you would never catch me dead in, everybody. But
I've seen you in several coffee shops in my lifetime.
Not drinking coffee. And I was there because Colton wanted
you
to be
you
there.
Were asking for the bathroom and then didn't leave.
But it would have never even taken me. I think this song could have been in the background while I was in a store and it would have never even taken me.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that I did actually get a chance to sit down and listen to it, because it does have some of those just, there's something to be said for something so bare, so minimal, and still impactful.
There's the flip side of this are songs that I hear, and unfortunately a lot of, I can think of are more recent songs, mm-hmm. where it's like hearing like a marketing plan, like built in. And I know that's hard, because if you're a younger songwriter and you're still like someone who was like, hey, I want people to hear my stuff and do this thing.
Yeah.
Like, there's always that, like, you know, what is the thing you can do to define yourself across like everyone? And I think nowadays, where it's all digital, right? And it's all about like trying to make your space in. I mean, God, at this point, what is it? It's probably TikTok, to be frank.
Yeah, TikTok, probably TikTok.
It's like, what's like the thing you can do to kind of muscle your way in? And I think it is, it's hard. I can't imagine trying to write songs in this kind of a landscape right now and not going crazy, because I've never thought of like, ooh, what am I going to do to get their attention in this one?
Yeah.
Like, which,
well, and I would
not successful. So
sure. But I mean, at that point, yeah, probably what makes this song so nice is it doesn't even sound like there's that much of an effort to try to blend in or to try to do anything. It's like, no, this song's good.
Yeah. It's a, maybe simple. I don't know if simpler times is correct, but I think we just expected different things out of music.
Well, this song was released in a time frame to where you didn't have this juggernaut of a media platform. Or was it like, I think him performing this on SNL, that probably pushed it to start chart topping.
Yeah. It's funny because I was just watching, I know I mentioned this in the first segment, Bohemian Rhapsody. And that ends with what I thought was a cool kind of ending sequence of the Queen set during Live Aid.
Yeah.
And they play almost the whole set. I think they're missing like one or two songs from that set, but it's like a 15 minute sequence. And I was talking to my wife about it, and I was like, you know, like if they tried to do a concert like this again, like in 2025, I don't think they could and it have the same effect, because the lineup for Live Aid was insane. I don't think Bruce Cock. Oh, burn. Can you have like a little bell chime for every time I say incorrect this episode?
I think so far we only really got one.
Well, now I feel like I should amp it up. But yeah. Just that vein, right, of songwriting. I'm not trying to be like, oh, God, 2025 music. But who would you fill that roster up in 2025? Like, you had Paul McCartney, you had Queen, you had Tom Petty, you had Bruce Springsteen, you had tons of like just amazing songwriters and, I don't know, man, vocalists.
Well, I think it just fits into, I know we've discussed it before, but it's back in the day to where if you're going to watch this television series, hey, it's on at 8:30. That's when you get to go and see it. If like the music was the same back then, where it's like, okay, you got these radio toppers. These are going to be the ones that you go to. Nowadays, I'm like, I don't know who number one is. I assume Kendrick Lamar. He would be part of the Live Aid. But then it's like, okay, all the other names I'm going to probably not know. But when they say that they're topping the charts, I'm like, does that just mean they have a big internet presence? Because the internet, I think, has just turned it around to where there is no like universals.
You know? I mean, it's the same thing we have when we talk about the Grammys. Like, it is the metrics that we base, like, the success behind bands and songwriters now is just very, very different. And not for nothing, a lot of it isn't based in songwriting. Like, those people aren't, and I don't even like how I sound right now, but
performance
it's a difference.
Artists.
Right? Yeah. It's, I don't like it, but I'm also a weird dude. Yeah. It's just different. I think what's funny that we're both getting at, and it's funny that it's this song that's bringing this conversation up, but it's kind of it feels natural, right? Where it's something so simple. I don't like the word, because it makes me feel like it's like there's a moral superiority to this song than others. But I think it's in the way that it's crafted. There's nothing about this song, Wondering Where the Lions Are, that's seeking like attention. It's inviting.
I like that,
right?
Yeah.
It's inviting, it's not calling out. I think it's interesting then to think about how just the media landscape at bay, and you mentioned it really nicely with the way that the monoculture of music, the way it used to be, where it's like, these are the radio stations, these are the concerts, these are the ways you get music. There was so much kind of more centralized, like just focus to that. It feels like we should be happy that music's more democratic now. I don't know if I feel that way. I don't know how you feel.
Yeah, well, it's just society's so polarized that there's like, we don't have anything that's kind of like we can all get behind, like, this is a great tune. You know, like, to where we're kind of left with artists being desperate for attention.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to kind of getting their due moment in the spotlight. Where now it just seems like the ones who get there, it's through shock value or through through nepotism.
My
which has always been there, but you know.
Well, I know what you mean though. Yeah. I think I'm thinking of the last song where I'm like, this is like as a nation we all kind of got behind, and I can't even say as a nation because I know for a fact a segment of this country did not like it, but They Not Like Us by Kendrick Lamar. Yeah. I think that was it.
God bless him. It was a cool moment, and I remember having that conversation. I don't want to be inaccurate on it, but I remember having that conversation with somebody just going like, isn't this kind of cool? Like, everybody's talking about this song. Well, except for half of the country, yes. But but yeah, it was cool that it was like, man, I feel like it feels like forever since we've had a true summer hit.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, sure, we can go to that Goat Ye song, but I was like, nobody was really talking about it. That was just a song that was always being played on radio stations.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
I know, I'm thinking of, and it's usually is a kind of song of the summer-esque thing, but It's always very, and I remember there was like a Billboard's Awards or something after that for Song of the Summer, and they not like this did not win. I think it was a Taylor Swift song with Post Malone.
And it's like, yeah, so sure.
So of course there's no consensus there, but it feels way out of line that we're talking about Kendrick Lamar now when we're just talking about Bruce Coburn, but it feels, there's a straight line there, right?
Well, there's just the comparison of the times. You know, yeah. And just comparison of what this song, and I mean, this song, when we say it charted, I've brought it up to my mom. I've brought it up to people literally from that time. Mm-hmm. I was like, never heard it. Never heard this song. So, I mean, it's not like this is a big song for Bruce Coburn, but even His biggest song is not humongous.
Not even a blip. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, it's wild. I'm happy that we got to talk about it. I don't know people, if you're listening to this and you're like, hey, Bruce Coburn. I do know for a fact, I believe it's the song or the record after this one, Humans. I think that is regarded as his kind of, his big opus, like the record to listen to. I like Dancing in the Dragon's Jaws, but I think as we can hear from this podcast and just otherwise, I'm a weird dude, man. I got weird.
Hey, you're weird. I'm nice and normal.
As Leo Carden would say, I'm a hipster, man.
You're just a hipster.
I got a zag where other people zig.
Well, maybe us just doing this one song is not necessarily saying we'll never cover Bruce Coburn again. And so maybe at some point we can do an album or two for an episode and dive a little deeper and get into a further understanding of him. Because just from this, I feel like I'm interested. I'm in.
Man, there's some cool stuff. And I think when I'm thinking of songwriting-wise, I can't say that there's a lot from him that I take away because I am never, and I think there are people who are starting too, like you kind of identify your strengths and your weaknesses and you know how to kind of play to them. And I realize my songwriting is never going to propel itself through musicianship. It's going to propel itself through lyrics, but also through arrangements, right? Like trying to make arrangements feel deeper and cooler in like little ways. And in that way, we're very different. And I'm very different from you because you, I'm very jealous of, you kind of have everything in your arsenal.
But... sure. Yeah. No. Well, that's the thing is, like I said, even listening to this song, I'm like, this isn't my usual thing. I'm not much on folk. I like folk songs, obviously.
Man, you would be such a good folk singer.
There are songs that are folk-esque within like Default American, but it's not quite the same. It is the coolest compliment. I think you gave it to me years and years ago. I was telling you how this song I was working on, I was like, oh, it reminds me of this band. And you were like, I got to stop you. You always say this song reminds you of blankety blank, reminds you of blankety blank. Every time you play the song, it's like, no, I just hear you. All right, that's cool. I'll take that. If I can, because I wanted to tell you, I started working on a song the other day, where I'm like, this is so at the drive-in. It's going to be amazing. And I was like, yeah, it probably will just end off sounding like a song written by me, just doing a couple of impressions.
That's cool, man. And I think that's, if we're using this podcast to, over time, at least that's how I think of it, which I really enjoy, like 55 episodes in or whatever it's been, trying to formulate a theory of what like quote unquote good songwriting is, like how do you tell? It feels impossible. It feels very subjective, but
it's definitely not genre specific.
Well, that's very true. And I think what's cool about this song, and I think you've already just touched on it, it's kind of knowing who you are and allowing that to, which feels very hokey, but it's true. It's when you know who you are and you know how you want to get that across. And it doesn't even have to be a song about you, but I think that does a lot. And I think, I don't think Bruce Coburn, for what I've heard, has spent a day in his life trying to not just be who he is. He's just kind of a nerdy dude. He wears Hawaiian shirts on stage sometimes.
From what I've heard, he keeps to himself for the most part. He's just,
God bless you, man.
He seems cool. I'm so happy that I've gotten to hear this song, and I am actually really looking forward to trying to do a deeper dive. Hear some other songs, because I have a very singular idea of what he sounds like, and I can't wait to hear him kind of surprise me.
We'll see, man. Well, I'm down for that. I think we have reached a natural stopping point to hear the Blamley. And here's where I'll just say, in protest, we're going to air this chit show ad.
That's right. We have not stopped protesting.
And we're going to... Oh, Lord. All right. We're going to let the Blamley take it away.
Yes.
All right.
When it comes to making the goings-on of the world entertaining, we got you covered. The Chit Show is a news, pop culture, geek culture, and music podcast hosted by none other than Danny, a.k.a. Danko, and me, Leo, a.k.a. DJ Brute. Tune in as we cover all sorts of topics with a very opinionated and wild twist. The Chit Show Podcast, where chit chat and shit shows come together for your entertainment. Tune in on your favorite streaming platforms with new episodes dropping every other Monday. Again, that's The Chit Show, a Baseblown Entertainment podcast. What happens when you get a bunch of obsessive music lovers sitting around a table and talking about every aspect in music? You get the Untitled Mixtape. Join Danko, Lewis, and Lorenzo in this educational but enjoyable podcast that encourages everyone to branch out and expand what they listen to. From deep dives to letting you know what is a bop or flop, the Untitled Mixtape boys are sure to take care of your music needs every Wednesday on your favorite podcast platform. The Untitled Mixtape, a Baseblown Entertainment podcast.
But I'm scared because it's like, that's how people listen to music now, on their laptops. Terrible.
Without headphones or something? Just through the laptop speakers?
Sure, that's what I do sometimes.
Welcome back. Fuck anybody who listens to music just through laptop speakers. That's insane.
I'm going to go ahead and just support what you said. Because I, having done it casually, I'll also say, when you work really hard to make a song sound a certain way, and then you run it through cheap laptop speakers or any laptop speaker.
Yeah, I mean, I've maybe tried to show somebody like, oh, you should check out this song, and I'll play it through my phone, through the speaker on that. But this isn't checking out the song. This is not the moment that you say, oh, okay, I like or dislike this song. And it's like, no, put on headphones, play it through some good speakers.
That is, I hate to be the when I release to say, listen to this on headphones, but that might have to be.
It's just listen to it on something that is not just a high trebly speaker. You know, you got to listen to it in a real way. You can't listen. You got a real visceral reaction out of me right there.
I know. I like it, though. Yes. This is the fire, man.
People, listen to music.
I think Bruce Coburn got you into like a nice, relaxed state, and then I lit a little spark.
Even Bruce Coburn don't listen to that on just... there's depth, there is EQ that makes the song pop much better than just through a, if a song sounds good through laptop speakers, try headphones, try real speakers.
You know what? I'm gonna get behind this. I think this is our first shirt. This is
100 out of 100. Listen to
just like a no smoking sign but with a laptop speaker in the middle.
Yeah,
don't do it, people.
Don't
all right.
It.
Well, you've done this to us, and when I say this, I mean every time that we do a single song now, we rate it out of 100.
Yes, we do.
Which I think is great. I think it's super fun.
Why not?
I also I have to remind myself, because I don't remember week to week what I gave Like a Rolling Stone and Let It Be, because I feel like if. How I rate this song relative to those two could cause some controversy.
Yeah, I think I know for me, I gave 85 and 85 for Bobby and Paul.
I'm going to go ahead and say I was probably around those, but maybe lower.
I think we
both cases.
I think we both agreed on Like a Rolling Stone at 85, mm-hmm. and then I think I kind of guilted you into giving Let It Be an 80.
That's fair. I mean, it is an 80s song. It's a B minus. That's fair.
Don't get me started, buddy.
Easy, easy.
If it's a B minus, that would be closer to like 100.
I'm going to go ahead and give us a start then. And this is, I brought this song and I really, really like it. And in fact, I didn't say anything negative about it. I don't have a lot of criticism because it's like when a song is only doing what it's setting out to do, mm-hmm. it's like really hard to fault that. And even like the way it sets up, like everything is more or less after that opening finger picking, when the instruments come in, it's revealed all of its tricks. Like, yeah. That's it. Like, there's no, like you said, there's no like musical interlude. There's no additional.
Yeah.
I think those, that boop, I want to say that's the keys, right? That come in. I think those come in a little bit later.
Essentially. Yeah.
But it's got everything laid out in front of you. It's in that way. It's very Dylan-esque, where Dylan was all about like, when the music kicks in, everything's there, and it's more about the vibe this song creates.
The only surprise I can think of that this song has is that drum fill. And it only happens twice.
And
I believe twice.
Boom, boom, boom. Oh, so good.
It's a great drum fill.
I want to do that now. I want to get on this set. But that all being said, like, I'm also not going to like pull a crazy thing and say this is like a perfect 100 out of 1. I think it is perfect in the way we've described perfect in the past.
I know what you mean.
It does what it does. And mm-hmm. a record full of these kinds of songs, that's all I want out of being a fan of music. I think 75 sounds right to me.
Not bad. Not bad. Yeah, because I think I'm landing on a 70 just because like I'm neither underwhelmed or overwhelmed.
Yeah.
So it kind of just fits in and it's like, okay, it's a good song. It's a good song. You know, I will absolutely listen to the song again, but it wouldn't be a song that I would, you know, play for somebody over laptop speakers. Check this out.
I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy, by the way. I think it's a weird kind of thing where these are not songs that get attention. I think it's hilarious that we've now had an entire podcast episode about it, because I don't know if that's ever happened in the history of music podcasting. But I think my top 10, if I was going to like list off the top of my head, which I'm not ready to do, of like mm-hmm. songs I really treasure, it's filled with these kinds of songs. Like, it's those small songs that, like, I don't know, like Old Hat by Ben Queller. Who's listening to Old Hat by Ben Queller now?
I'm probably going to listen to that right when we get off of this. I love that song.
It's great, amazing. Too. Talk about a perfect song, right?
Yeah.
And if we did that.
I believe that was your perfect song when we.
I think we brought it up at some point. Yeah. And if we talked about it today, maybe a 75. Like, it's funny how that changes, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting. Well, it's again, I think it goes back to the talking about Bob Dylan and the Beatles, how it's like you're a little bit more of like a Bob Dylan sensibility. I'm a little bit more of a Beatles sensibility. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, yeah, for me, I'm going to want someone to be like, you know, striving towards some musicianship stuff, whether it be complex or just creative. Mm-hmm. And I think we can even say the same thing for Bob Dylan. Like with Bob Dylan, he's got lyrics that are just like, whoa. You know, you have to kind of take a step back, listen to it again, start dissecting it. This song is definitely in the Bob Dylan vein.
Yeah, definitely.
But the lyrics are not necessarily that.
They don't have the poetic.
Deep. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard, right? I mean, I think there's a lot behind its simplicity. I'll put it that way. And I think I mentioned it with like him talking about nature so much. And there's others. I mean, the young man marching, helmet shining in the sun, polished as precise like the brain behind the gun. Like, these are, again, like they're small little snapshots, and there's a lot that goes behind it. Like, it's anti-war. It is like getting behind, like, you know, people enlisting in the military. But like you said, it doesn't have the Dylan mysticism, right? The Dylan is so kind of good at like churning out. It's hard. I think I actually thought about this after we did our Beatles episode. I was trying to think of how to better describe why it's Dylan and not the Beatles that I always gravitate to in that era of music, like in the 60s, right? In 64, 65. I think it's when I think of the Beatles, I think of like hitting a hammer on a nail. And it's just like that really precise, tight form of songwriting where gotcha. There's that one target they're aiming for, right? That one emotional note that they want to hit. And they're so, I don't know in that vein of a lot of bands who can hit that hammer or hit the nail with the hammer with yeah. that precision. And it's musically, right? The lyrics are crafted to hit that one thing.
Yeah.
Dylan, to me,
is absolutely aiming for your thumb.
It's Dylan is like walking into a room and the song is the room and there are ideas everywhere and sometimes too many ideas and the room doesn't change, right? It's like the song is stable, right? The music is stable and it's more about like the atmosphere of the room and what things you focus on. Like on a given listen, right? A thing that you kind of draw yourself to.
You walk in a room.
I'm always going to be drawn more to that songwriting. And I think that's why I am so high on Bruce Coburn, because it's the same idea. And is there as much to pull from in this song as there is from like a Dylan song or whoever else you want to, a Paul Simon song or something like that? No, but man, I'm just so happy he exists.
Same. And like I said, I'm looking forward to seeing more of his existence. Getting a broader perspective, because with this I'm like, I can't assume that he's just relaxing on the beach contemplating.
I'll tell you this, I think one of his other more famous songs I think is great is called If I Had a Rocket Launcher.
Okay.
And it's pretty damn good, and it is if you're looking for dark Bruce Coburn, I don't know. Listeners, if you know what the darker Bruce Coburn discography is all about, email us.
Yes.
At what is it, Rob?
No. your.writes.podcast@gmail.com.
We're flooded. We're getting an intern to go through all the emails we've gotten That's in the right. past couple of weeks. So if there's a delay, just know we're getting to you.
You're getting an intern.
Lucky.
Do you need an intern for?
It's because you haven't been to your job.
I haven't seen him in forever.
Months, yeah. And it's upsetting, man. We're trying to give you a break here.
It was St. Patrick's Day.
That was weeks ago.
It's a very cherished holiday.
I have yet to, in our audio boom, yet to hear a listener from Ireland. I think Lucky is the reason. Ireland, we're very sorry. We don't know where this came from, but we love you.
We love you, Ireland. I'm checking right now to see. Oh yeah, we got a ton of emails.
Oh man,
we want to address them now.
Maybe stop emailing us till we can get caught up.
Yeah.
Oh no. Let's keep it going.
We love them.
Oh Lord. All right. Well, our next episode is Phoebe Bridgers.
Yes, it is.
Where are you at? Let's do a check in.
Right. Listen to all of it. Yeah. Listen to all of it. I have all my notes. I have everything. Yeah.
I've listened to a decent amount. I have still not listened to Boy Genius yet. I'm excited to. I haven't heard it at all. And when they were kind of going through their paces on a circuit and doing SNL and everything, I still really hadn't listened to them. So, but I'll say right now, Punisher it's a cool piece of work. I'm excited to hear what you have to say about it.
I already listened to it, so I got plenty to say.
Of course. You are, at this point, neck deep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what they call the toe, right? The neck? Is that the...
Exactly, yeah.
Well, so that is our next episode. But then following that, we have Rob's round.
Yeah.
It would have been better if we had alternated this a little bit more, but we're flying by the seat of our pants here.
Yeah, we're going to be okay.
You have a song. Apparently someone has requested this song.
Not requested this song, requested this artist. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, we're not going to do all of this artist's albums. It's a lot of albums. So my first hint, you may be able to guess it. I'm not sure. I may have said it in this podcast at one point. But my first hint is this is my first favorite song.
Man, this is bad because now not only am I going to be bad at like guessing, I'm also going to be like a bad friend.
Just
because
a
I
bad
don't remember.
Friend.
Yeah.
No. I'm sure that there are a couple of people listening who know immediately now. All right. My second hint is, it's a band. Similar time frame, so we're looking around 70s. Tuesday.
It's not Thursday.
It's not Thursday.
See, I'm just going on, I'm all over the place. That's the first thing I thought of. I was like, Thursday. I'm just going to go through all of my days of the week bands.
Day of the week.
All
right.
Back Sunday, Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it would be that tasteful if we decided to do one song by Thursday after having done their discography.
Yeah.
And after having done LS Dunes one episode ago.
Yeah, that's fine. We can do it.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, Thursday. I need more. Or Tuesday. Right. I see Tuesday. I'm way out here. On, Tuesday.
All right. Second hint. Afternoon. Yeah, if you can't get it off of that, then...
Is it Afternoon Delight?
No.
Skyrocket and Flight? No.
Okay. I'll give you... I literally have said the title now.
Tuesday Afternoon.
Tuesday Afternoon. All right, you've never heard this song.
I've never heard this song before.
All right, it's by... I don't see why I continue with hints at this point, right?
Wait, I want to guess the artist. I want to guess the artist. Okay. Give me
An artist-based hint.
Hint.
Okay, artist-based
I could look this up, but there are people who know now, and they're just yelling at me.
Maybe. It's not necessarily... okay, I'll give you an artist-based hint. Satin. I'm referencing one of their big songs. It was in a skate video. It's a slower song. This isn't the song, but it's their big hit. If I say Nights in White Satin.
Man.
Ooh, yeah. Embarrassing.
Oh.
Embarrassing.
Okay, I'm looking this up.
Just type Nights in White Satin or Tuesday Afternoon.
Oh, I was never going to guess this in a million years.
Okay.
Yeah. The Moody Blues.
Yeah, the Moody Blues. I'm sure you've heard Nights in White Satin, though. And I love you. Yes, I love you. I'm not going to sing the next note because it would be able to.
I'm listening to it now.
Which one? Are you listening? Nights in White Satin?
No, I'm listening to it just to get a...
Oh my God, I think he's never heard this song. Colton, watch.
Yeah, I've never heard. I'm
watch
not a Moody Blues guy.
Skate video.
What
well,
skate
you don't
video?
Know for sure. I can't remember. It was a long time ago. There was a skate. I want to say it was like Rodney Mullen or something like that.
Interesting. This is cool, man. I have never, here's the thing. I have heard of the Moody Blues. I have never sat down and listened to the Moody Blues.
I love their album, Days of Futures Past.
So once we do Phoebe Bridgers, after that, we are doing Tuesday Afternoon.
Tuesday, the first song that I fell in love with. I'll save the stories for later.
We are unpacking the Rob Cannon, two episodes from now. I'm excited. I'm enjoying that's how these single song episodes are starting to take up now. It's going through our influences a bit more.
I was originally going like, I'm gonna break it back to let's just do a classic song that everybody knows. I was like, you know what, I'm gonna eye for an eye this. Colton brought up kind of a little bit more of an obscure song. Tuesday Afternoon is a little bit in that obscure vein.
We're doing it, man. We are. You know what, everyone, just hang on, buckle up.
That's right,
we're gonna do this. I'm excited, and I'm very excited to talk to you about Phoebe Bridgers.
Yes, it's gonna be a good time.
Which I guess by that point, I'll learn that her name is actually pronounced Phoebe Bridgers.
Phoebe Bridgers. That's so what I call her.
So Lucky.
I know.
So sorry, Lucky. I feel like this whole episode, I just have to apologize, everyone. But I love everyone. I love you, Rob.
I love you too. And Lucky, you're being replaced.
You're being replaced. We're going to replace you with what's a less offensive country to...
I don't think there is one.
Literally none. So
not
from there
a single
on...
one. Your replacement will be never named.
Never named.
Love you, man.
I love you too.